Michael.
Dubé versus Michael Eckelberg, and it's appeal 02382. He loves me. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, Mr. Briggs.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The case before you, while it has many twists and turns and numerous issues, is really quite simple. What happened was we had a long-term police department with a chief that had been there 18 years, a number of officers part-time that had been there between 6 and 18 years, and all of a sudden the police department was investigating sexual assaults by the village president's son on a child. There was a cover-up that ensued between a police officer who was on the department and the village president. Once the village president learned that later the case had been reopened by other officers, including the chief, that's when things started to happen. And basically what occurred from there was a number of violations, but it culminated in the decimation of the police department. Once the officers were terminated, and then they brought an action...
Let me include a question. What's the population of the city involved?
The population of the city is only 1,400, Your Honor, but it's a very strange town because... Well, there are numerous campgrounds in the area that sponsor huge concerts. As an example, on Memorial Day weekend, they'll have the 15 heavy metal band extravaganza weekend.
It is strange.
Yes, and the officers in that town will make up to 1,000 arrests or citations during that three-day period.
Where do they put them?
Basically, it's mostly cite and release, but otherwise they're taken to the St. Croix County Jail. As another example, we had a Metallica concert. As an example, Officer Brave, me, made 9 DWI arrests in one day, in addition to everything else. So even though the town is 1,400 to 1,500 people, they would arrest up to 5,000 people in a year.
What's the makeup of the police department? How many permanent members are there?
Well, the department at that time was a police chief, one sergeant, I believe it was three full-time, and approximately 10 part-time officers. The part-time officers would fill in.
So there are five full-time members of the police department. Everybody else is part-time.
Yes, Your Honor.
And they get called in for these, for riot, civil commotion, and for the metal, hard metal, or what metal?
The heavy metal kind.
Heavy metal.
And also when needed to fill in for the other officers, yes.
Okay.
And they also did other duties for the department.
Now, at one point in the brief, you state that the part-time officers were terminated. But that the defendants reinstated them by pretending that they were never terminated.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, what practical difference does that make, and what damage was there to the officers from that?
The damages are that they were, in fact, terminated, as there are numerous things that show that. What happened after that is obvious in some of the testimony, is that there was a cover-up that ensued to pretend as though the officer was not terminated. As an example, the head of public safety, Ms. Vanas, told the police department secretary that, yes, we were getting rid of all the part-time officers, but we're not going to tell them that. We're not going to send them letters of termination. And one of the reasons that's important is because back in 96 and 97, two of these same part-time officers were terminated at that time. They brought an action before the federal district court, and on summary judgment, they were put back saying that, yes, their due process rights had been violated. The cover-up did not occur until after April 1st, which is when three of the part-time officers brought a police review board action against the police chief at that time to have him held accountable for illegally terminating the police officers.
Who decides when they're going to be called to duty, the part-time officers? Who makes that decision?
The chief of police, and occasionally done on a seniority basis, but not always.
But it's purely a subjective decision on his part. There's no time period where they have to be called back in.
There is no time they have to be called back.
He makes a decision on an ad hoc basis as to whether they should be called.
Yes, Your Honor. The only time everyone was used, of course, were during these concert type events or the 4th of July weekend or something similar.
And even then it would be mandatory. If he decided he didn't need him, he wouldn't call him. Am I correct?
In the past it had been mandatory, but I believe that you're correct that he would not have to call them if he did not want to.
Now, putting Officer Dubé aside, because unlike the others, he was terminated.
Yes, the question is, Your Honor, which date?
Yeah, but With the other officers, the police board held that they were not terminated, and none of them appealed that determination.
Your Honor, there was never a hearing on that issue. It was basically determined they were not terminated because of an affidavit put forward by Chief Harview that had lies on it regarding the fact that Chief Harview told several people that the two officers who were remaining, Kappers and Wojciechowski, and the part-time officers that he had hired were the only officers. He told the dispatch center that he doesn't know how he can hire these people back. He called the officers, former officers, several times. Then, in his affidavit that was presented to the police review board, he lied in the affidavit saying that no one had been notified that they had been terminated when, in fact, they had. Both Brave and Carnes had both been told they were no longer officers of the department.
But a number of them worked shifts since that.
Only one, Your Honor, Daniel Barber. He worked two shifts, and he was told not to work anymore.
So, what are you saying now, that all of them have been terminated?
Yes, Your Honor. And it's also very important to remember that the Police Review Board, when the complaint is filed to attempt to hold the chief accountable, it says that a hearing shall be held, which includes witnesses, subpoenas, etc. No hearing was ever held. There was never a hearing on the issues. They basically decided it based upon the chief's affidavit at that time, which contained two false statements.
Okay, let me just make sure I understand. They've all been terminated. None of them are working as officers.
As of that time, yes, Your Honor, you're correct.
As of what time?
As of March and April of 2001, yes. Daniel Barber did work one or two shifts prior to Chief Harview taking over power on February 19th.
Okay. What does the record tell us what's happened since? Where does the record stop?
I believe the record stops in February of 2002.
Okay, who's a police officer in 2002?
According to their records, and since they had the routes to rehire them, the ones that are still listed that are of the listing are Brave, Bonneman, Carnes, and Barber. However, Bonneman has not been allowed to work, and he was told he couldn't work due to allegedly complications with his continuing education through the state Peace Officer Standards and Training Board with Wisconsin.
Are you Michael A. Brave?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. You're Michael Brave, attorney at law, but you're Michael A. Brave?
Yes, I am both. I am one of the plaintiffs.
Okay. So, are you still a police officer?
I'm on the list. I have not worked a shift, nor am I allowed to carry a firearm, etc. So, am I on their list at this point in time? I'm back on their list, yes. And I'm now listed as a police officer under their auspices. Am I working any shifts? No. I was offered a couple of shifts last year. However, I turned them down because I was under strict requirements to read their policies and adhere to them, and their policies were conflicting in numerous areas which they were impossible to adhere to, and there was no time between the event that I was asked to work the one four-hour shift and reading the policies, and therefore I requested of the chief at that time, Douglas Briggs, to not work that shift, and he agreed because of the reasons I just stated.
Okay, let me take you somewhere else. But still in this courtroom. Okay, regarding Officer Dubé's claim under the First Amendment, you argued that it was because of his involvement in the investigation. But can you identify with particularity what speech he engaged in, when it occurred, and the manner in which it was communicated? In other words, what, when, and the manner?
Officer Dubé had communicated with Chief Path regarding the investigation. When Mr. Dubé's career with the department began to go downhill was right after he interviewed the mother of the child victim of the sexual assaults. That mother called Mrs. Eckelberg, the wife of the village president, and told her what had occurred, and then she told her husband, Mr. Eckelberg, the village president. Immediately after that, within hours, there was a special board meeting of the village board where Mr. Eckelberg, the village president, gave information to the village board about Officer Dubé, the investigation, a false allegation that Mr. Dubé had been stalking the family, sitting outside the house for 3 days, etc.
Well, did that answer your question, Judge? Or
you have to understand, Your Honor, we were all the officers in this case were very much severely restricted in discussing this case because we were talking about the sexual assault of a 14-year-old child.
Didn't you ask what he said to whom and in what manner?
He had continuously talked to Chief Pass discussing the case with him. Chief
so
Pass,
there's no specific one time, it's only when he talks to the chief?
Well, he also talked to Ms. Widman, who was in charge of social services for the county. He spoke to her on January 11th with the chief discussing this case and discussing why charges had never been filed against the son of the village president.
And was that at an official meeting?
It was the police chief and Officer Dubé meeting with her. It was arranged by appointment. Whether or not that's an official meeting, I can't answer that.
Go ahead. Thanks.
As I began to state before, there are basically numerous issues in this case. And in the due process case, it's the termination without due process. Secondly, it's the demotion of Carnes and Brave without due process. Third, there's an issue brought up by appellate.
But wait a minute. You say the demotion, but you've been offered shifts. And you've refused to take the shift.
The demotion, Your Honor, was for Carnes. He was a corporal with the ability to carry a firearm. He was demoted to a reserve officer with no ability to carry a firearm. Officer Bray was a captain on the department, as well as training officer and a few other things. And he, too, had permission to carry a firearm. He too, was demoted to police officer, again, with no permission to carry a firearm. Those were the demotions. The reason the officers that are still listed have not taken shifts is because everything that occurred, the lies that occurred, the cover-ups, etc., the officers are very much concerned that anything they do, they could be brought up before additional charges before the Police Review Board and be terminated, and they would go through the process the same as we had seen done to other officers, which are basically trumped-up charges with a lot of innuendo, brought before the board, the Police Review Board, they rubber-stamp what occurred, and the officers have been terminated in that manner. That's why these officers haven't worked, because they're concerned about that based upon what occurred between February and April 2001, and all the cover-ups that occurred at that point in time.
And if they were to work, they could not carry a gun?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gray. Okay. Mr. Gilligan.
Okay, please, the court. I'm Tom Gilligan, and I represent the defendants appellees in this case. Just a couple of things that I wanted to follow up on with respect to the facts. You asked what is at stake here, and one of the reasons why I spent so much time talking about how often these folks worked and when they last worked was just because of that reason. These are very occasional positions, very seasonal positions. Mr. Barber suggested that the majority of the time that they spent as officers was between Memorial Day weekend and Labor Day weekend. The events that we're concerned with here occurred in February, March, and April. Some of these folks, for example, Ms. Path, hadn't worked a paid shift since 1999. Mr. Brave hadn't worked a paid shift since 1997. Mr. Carnes worked a total of 54 hours during the previous year. Mr. Dubé worked 130 hours during the previous year. So we're not talking about a great deal of time. The other thing is that this is at the discretion of the chief, whether or not he's going to have these people fill shifts. One of the things that I also wanted to touch upon was the fact that they have continued to be offered shifts. There are several letters that we've attached to the appendix which demonstrate the letters that were going out to all the part-time reserve officers.
But is it a shift without carrying your gun?
Well, now it's been so long since these folks have worked that there are some issues about whether or not they have the proper qualifications. And we've got...
We'll send them to Mattoon.
Well, we've got... we've got a couple of new people that are in charge. And there have been three people who have been in charge of the department since February of 2001. One of the things that I think is important from a contextual standpoint is taking a look at John Harvey, who was the interim chief. He only served as chief from February 19th of 2001 to May 18th of 2001, a very short period of time. He came into this department in complete chaos. The chief had already resigned in scandal. The second in command had been found by the police review board to have committed all sorts of violations and was terminated. We had very low-level folks who were in charge of the department, and in fact, for a month's period of time, the public service commissioner, who was a member of the village board, was running this police department. So he was coming in the middle of this chaos. And one of the other things was that this department was still under investigation by the Department of Justice. This whole thing started on January 11th when the Department of Justice served a search warrant on the department and confiscated computers and personnel files and other things like that.
Now, tell me this. Wasn't the timing of Officer Dubé's termination suspect coming on the very heels of the Joshua Eckelberg investigation? And shouldn't a jury resolve whether that was the true reason for his termination?
Well, one of the things that you raised was what speech was it that Officer Dubé engaged in? And I still don't know exactly what speech he engaged in that should have been protected. The thing about that is that he was doing his job. And I think that what the district court did was adopted, even though it didn't expressly say so, the Gonzalez analysis of if you are doing your job, and this is something that is without discretion, it is not going to constitute speaking out on a matter of public concern. But with respect to the timing, Your Honor, I think one of the critical points is that the allegation, I mean the factual allegation, and this investigation regarding Joshua Eckelberg, the events took place in 1998. Now, the investigation that was being conducted by the village board regarding the department started in November of 2000, okay, several years later. So this is an ongoing investigation at the time. Now, all of a sudden, 3 years later, we've got Officer Dubé and Chief Paff deciding that they want to follow up on a prosecution that should have happened long ago. The very day that they begin the investigation, January 11th of 2001, is the same day that the search warrant was served on the department. The following by the federal authorities. And these investigations were being done coincidentally. The second day, January 12th of 2001, is when the Police Review Board meets and they say that they are going to issue charges against several of the police department officers. And what transpires after that is who's going to get to the courthouse first. Is it going to be Paff and Dubé in connection with the investigation of Eckelberg, or is it going to be the village in connection with their charges against Officer Dixon and Chief Paff?
Now, the events took place in 1998. The allegation is that the events involving Mr. Eckelberg and the 14-year-old took place in 1998. But wasn't it ongoing, allegedly?
It was ongoing. This was a high school dating relationship, and it was still illegal. There's no question about that. But that was the nature of this relationship. And with respect to...
Give me the exact ages of the two.
I wish I could. I believe that J.D. was 14, turning 15, and Joshua Eckelberg was 17, turning 18 at the time that was going on. With respect to Officer Dubé, one of the things that I think is critical here is taking a look at the Police Review Board's perspective on him. Becky Linke and Mr. Eckelberg both testified about this in terms of whether or not they believed that Officer Dubé was trustworthy and loyal because of his association with Chief Path, who had resigned in scandal. You know, that is really the essence. And what happens is that all of the probationary officers are terminated at the same time. There were four officers who were terminated on February 4th. They were all terminated at the same time. And one of the reasons why they terminated them was because they could.
And the four are Darren Carnes, Daniel Barber.
No, the four probationary officers who were terminated were Lisa Bonneman.
Wife of Michael Bonneman?
No, I think niece.
Okay, Lisa Bonneman.
Fred Myers.
No.
James Harker. And Michael Dubé.
But Harker and Myers' terminations were effective May 1, right?
Well, they were all terminated by receiving the same type of letter in March. I mean, the letter was dated in March. The terminations, it said, as of February 4th, you are hereby terminated. And what happens later on is Mr. Dubé, in connection with the Police Review Board hearings, makes it an issue about whether or not his termination was valid, which is why the Village Board revisited that issue. He never appealed from that determination. He never brought any type of action regarding whether or not that was appropriate in light of any potential closed meeting violation. A couple other things. With respect to one argument that I made both in connection with the motion to dismiss and with the motion for summary judgment, with absolute quasi-judicial immunity, and that is only as to the Police Review Board. The Police Review Board acted as a judicial body. They received charges, they heard motions, they made decisions, they considered evidence, and they issued written findings and conclusions. In connection with this case, the precedent for dealing with dispositive motions was reached when they did the initial hearing in February with respect to Officer Dixon. And we've submitted some of the transcripts of that. There was a motion to dismiss, for example, that was addressed by that body. Under Wisconsin Statute 6213-5G, the Police Review Board can set its own rules. And what they were doing here was they were considering dispositive motions. For example, with respect to Officer Dubé, he made his charges against Officer Cappers. Officer Cappers' lawyer brought a motion to dismiss. It was not initiated by the Village Board. They considered it. They heard evidence. Mr. Dubé issued a 44-page memorandum in support of his position. He came and argued his position, and they made a decision. And they issued written findings and conclusions of law as a result of that. With respect to other allegations of Brave, Bonneman, and Carnes, they did the same thing. They determined whether, as a threshold matter, this is a case that should be heard by the Police Review Board. They had counsel advising them. They issued very detailed written findings, which we have, which states exactly why they did what they did. Now, that's the type of situation that you should be protected by immunity. They shouldn't be faced with a lawsuit because they make a decision that the aggrieved parties don't like. And this is something that I think that the district court should have addressed and that this court can address because it was raised below.
Let me just ask you a practical question just in terms of what happened here. Why didn't Harvo simply figure out who was being investigated and who wasn't as soon as he became police chief?
Well, one of the things that he testified about was, first of all, he didn't want to be involved in the investigation at all. He wanted to stay completely away from that. He knew that there were other authorities who were in the process of doing that. All right. In addition, what he was trying to do was get the department operational. Now, this is a department without computers. It's a department without some files. It's a department without its top leadership. And so he's trying to figure things out. The conversations that he has with Carnes, Bonneman, and Brave that they surreptitiously tape recorded occurred just a couple of weeks after he started his job. And he says very clearly in there, I haven't had time to look at these. I haven't seen your personnel file. I don't know what your status is. He didn't know who was a former employee, who was a current employee. He didn't know who was a good guy and who was a bad guy. There had been allegations of theft of evidence. There had been allegations of sales of guns. And he was just trying to figure things out. So what he decided to do, and this provides the rational basis for doing what he's doing, what he decides to do is bring in some people that he knows and trusts. And he does this on a temporary basis. He brings in people who are sworn peace officers from other agencies to come in and fill shifts during this period of time. And so he's really a guy who's just doing the best he can under the circumstances, and that's really what he had to deal with. Now, could he have gone out and figured that out? I think he could have. Did he feel like he had time to do that, and did he think it was appropriate to do that? Not at that point.
What was the date of that point?
Well, what happens is there are these three phone calls that take place from mid to late March. The police review board charges that were filed by the plaintiffs all took place on April 1st.
So in other words, it's not their busy season.
This is not the busy season. I mean, he is having to fill shifts in order to make sure that he's got police force on the street. But again, in a town of 1,400 to 1,500 during the winter, that wasn't a pressing concern.
Do you know the average arrest, for instance, in a month like April in that town?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
Sorry.
I mean, that's a phenomenal number that we heard about, you know, when Mr. Brave was up there.
That causes a pretty good amount of controversy in western Wisconsin and Minnesota, those concert weekends.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not dealing with that time period.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And the other thing about that is that all of these gentlemen, except for Mr. Dubé, who was terminated, and Joanne Paff, who quit, all of these individuals have been offered shifts. Some have even worked. Officer Carnes worked recently. Mr. Barber worked even after they alleged that he was terminated.
Now, do we know if Officer Carnes worked with or without a gun?
He worked without a gun.
Wow.
And I think that... One of the things that is important with respect to that... there are a number of cases that I cited that deal with some of the terms of employment and what is going to constitute something that should be a protected property interest and what is not. And it is up to the chief to determine how those things are going to be carried out and whether or not something like that would rise to the level of protected property interest. The red light flashed. I'm sorry. Thank you. With respect to the equal protection claims, what I want to focus on is rational basis and vindictiveness. They have made class of one equal protection claims. With respect to vindictiveness, a tincture of ill will does not invalidate government action. Spite must be the sole cause. And for a guy like John Harview, who didn't even know any of these individuals, to suggest that he was somehow vindictive or spiteful in this connection is ridiculous. There's absolutely no support in the record for that. And vindictiveness was really not argued at all in the principal brief in this case, and I think four lines were devoted to it in the reply brief. Plaintiffs are making circular arguments to the extent that they're vindictive just because they're vindictive, or they paint with a broad brush and say, we've offered plenty of evidence of vindictiveness. There's no evidence to suggest that there was any vindictive behavior with respect to Chief Harvey. With respect to the other plaintiffs, and with specific respect to the rational basis for the decisions, if we take a look at the police review board and just isolate on those, the rational basis fourth decision was clearly articulated in all the written findings that it made. And so we don't have to look any farther to determine whether or not the basis was rational. With respect to the conduct of Chief Harview, we can see in every instance he articulates a rational basis for doing what he did. Why didn't he schedule them for shifts? Well, he wanted to schedule people that he knew and trusted because he didn't know who was being investigated and who was not. Why did he get rid of all the mailboxes? He didn't think this was an efficient method of communication. He got rid of everybody's mailbox. Why did he change the duty numbers at the dispatch center? Because in his experience, this was an inefficient use of those dispatch numbers. And for field expediency reasons, he was going to assign dispatch numbers to people who were then working. With respect to locking the door on the police department or changing the combination lock, one of the allegations was theft of evidence. And so it was logical that he would do that. One of the issues here, I mean, I guess the seminal issue for most of these folks, is whether or not they were terminated. One of the things I think is that this has already been judicially established by the police review board, which determined that they were not terminated. Now, this is a favorable finding. If they contended that they were terminated and somebody found that they were in fact not terminated, this should be a good thing. But if you take a look at all of the things that happened in context, in particular focusing on Chief Harview's surreptitiously taped but spontaneous conversations that he has with Brave, Bonneman, and Carnes, you can see that he hasn't terminated anybody. He's just trying to figure things out. He doesn't know whether or not these gentlemen are current police officers, former police officers, whether they've been involved in any wrongdoing or not. All he knew is that he wasn't scheduling them at that time. With respect to free speech, and I want to shift, we dealt with Officer DeBay a little bit, with respect to the remaining officers. I don't know what the free speech is that they contend that they were engaged in. They haven't articulated anything specific that would provide the sole motivation for their termination or under which we could engage in a conic or Pickering analysis. We simply do not know what that free speech was. We respectfully request that the district court's decision be affirmed in all respects. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gilligan.
Great. Your Honor, there's a number of things that I would like to clear up very quickly. First, Path and Mr. DeBay went and spoke to Ms. Widman in the morning of January 11th. The search warrant was not until that night. It's important to understand, though, that search warrant was primarily acquired by Michael Cappers, the officer that was in collusion with Mr. Eckelberg, and an officer named Kyle Magnus of the county. It wasn't a federal search warrant. It was a state search warrant, and those were the two principal men. What's important to understand here, as an example, Kyle Magnus was the only person at the Dixon Police Review Board hearings who admitted to stealing theft of alcohol from Somerset PD while he was working as a St. Clair County Sheriff's Deputy. Yet he, to this day, has complete access to the police department, including access to the back door. So this argument that they're so concerned about theft, the only person that admitted to the theft was the one who helped acquire the search warrant. Actually, he was the principal officer that acquired it, and he still has access to the police department to this day. As far as shifts, Mr. Carnes was normally on these three-day weekends. These part-time officers work 18 hours a day per day for 3 days or more. Mr. Carnes was offered a four-hour shift from noon until 4 on Saturday, and he had to work with Cappers. the same officer who was involved with the cover-up of the Eckelberg investigation. So, yes, was the operative shift? Yes, he was. However, Carnes knew what Kappers had done. Now, Carnes was being forced to work with Kappers for a four-hour shift in the middle of the day, and Carnes was again worried he was being set up. That's the kind of shifts we're talking about. John Harvey, he was there for approximately a month before the phone calls from Brave, Carnes, and Bonneman. It's important to understand that Vanas was also there, the head of public safety, who knew all of these people, had been there almost every day. She testified to that. And also, Harvey was in close contact with Vanas and Eckelberg. Additionally, Vanas testified she gave all the employee files to Harvey within 1 week of him taking office. He knew who these people were. It's just like the lies that he put in his affidavit that he had not done anything. When he found out that basically we could prove that he had lied, of course, he changed his entire story. And it's not just Harview. Mina Poschel, one of the board members at that time, told several of us, including Chief Paff, on April 1st that she had been in a board meeting and they decided to get rid of all the part-time. They just weren't going to tell them. They did this. Vanas told the police department secretary, yes, we're getting rid of all the old part-time. We're just not going to notify them. They're gone. All of these things took place. It's not just Harview. It's also the board, it's police review board, etc. As far as the police review board, again, there was never a hearing. The statute, 62.13(5), states they shall hold a hearing within 10 to 30 days once a complaint is brought. On the complaints by these officers, there was never a hearing held, ever. There were subpoenas issued. We asked for subpoenas and they gave them to us. We had witnesses there, but basically they disposed of all three of the cases before
How do we get past the fact that the police board holds that they're not terminated and they don't appeal that determination?
Your Honor, to appeal it, you have to have a negative consequence. Since there was no negative consequence, there was nothing to appeal. Secondly, since there was no since there was no hearing, there was basically nothing to appeal. And again, they decided based upon the false affidavit of Chief Harvey. In other words, the officers were terminated, and there's plenty of evidence to show that. When they were called on it by the Police Review Board charges being filed against Chief Harvey, that is when they made this ruse up, no, you were never terminated, and covered it up and worked with the Police Review Board to make it happen, including with the false affidavit. As far as Mr. Dubay, yes, those four probationary officers were terminated February 4th illegally. Then Harker and Myers were again terminated on May 1st. Dubay, one of the reasons they dismissed his Police Review Board complaint against Kappers, allegedly, was because he was not a sworn police officer when he filed the complaint. So on May 14th, Mr. Dubay, as a sworn police officer, since he had not been re-terminated, filed his Police Review Board against Kappers again. Then on May 15th, the board terminated Dubay, making it retroactive to February 4th, so that he was not a police officer on May 14th when he filed a second complaint. Mr. Gilligan stated the second command had been terminated for numerous violations. He wasn't. He resigned. It was Sergeant Chris Martin. This has gone too many different directions. I really don't know where else to go. But the bottom line is the officers were terminated.
How about us?
The officers were terminated. Then they tried to make it happen, make it look as though it had never happened. Therefore, they brought them back. It goes downhill from there.
Yes. Thank you very
much. That's enough.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Brave, Mr. Gilligan.